Ready to find your next favorite podcast? Start here.
Rather than being a great social leveler, there are actually stark inequities on sites like GoFundMe, having to do with wealth, class, race, education, even your zip code.
It's called Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth.
Specifically, it was Brian's book.
When we saw protesters with the book on Alamo Plaza, that was the first time we realized that more was happening or more was going to happen than we expected.
From the very, very beginning of Cincinnati up until the 1930s, the equivalent of chicken wings was oysters.
What?
Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati?
Cincinnati went through a ton of oysters.
What?
On the way today, we'll sample these three podcasts, Tiny Spark, The Experiment, and When Pigs Fly. Welcome to Start Here from Cincinnati Public Radio. I'm Trip Eldridge. Each week, we sample and highlight three podcasts to help you navigate the exploding podcast world and maybe find your next podcast obsession. Plus, get an email summary of each podcast we feature with our weekly Start Here email blast. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here blast email at the bottom of the page. And if you like what you hear, please rate us an Apple Podcast. A 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. With special thanks to Cincinnati Public Radio's Jim Nolan and Kevin Reynolds, and curation, writing, and producing from Connor Eldridge, let's start here. Podcasts and investigative journalism go hand in hand. The audio form has allowed an explosion of long-form reporting on many areas of life and society. One area few journalism podcasts have ventured into, though, is philanthropy and nonprofits. Well, that's the focus of this investigative podcast, Tiny Spark. It's been around for 10 years, but you may not have heard of it. Tiny Spark was founded in 2011 by former PRI Africa correspondent Amy Costello. Amy was a producer at NPR for 3 years before she moved to Africa, and she worked as an adjunct professor at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. Then after returning to the U.S., Amy continued to report on human rights issues, moderating podcasts for UNICEF, Human Rights Watch, and the PBS television series War, Women, and Peace, before starting Tiny Spark. Here's a sample of Tiny Spark, this powerful and insightful podcast from the episode that features Nora Kenworthy, who recently studied the crowdfunding site GoFundMe and how it results in stark inequities. The site says it's raised over $9 billion, but how effective is the for-profit company helping those that need help? Here's host Amy Costello.
Say you're experiencing a health crisis, mounting medical bills, unable to pay your rent. Well, just launch a campaign, and a crowd of friends and even strangers will help you out. So when COVID hit, a ton of people hopped on the platform with these same hopes in mind. At the time, people were dying. Many were struggling financially.
In March, I did lose my job.
These are clips from videos that people made for their COVID-related GoFundMe campaigns.
It's hard. I'm trying to think about it as an opportunity, but, you know, like, everything is now a little bit more stressful.
Today, you can help an artist pay their
bills. If you put your needs out there, that hopefully they'll gain traction and kind strangers will give you assistance. But that's not quite how the platform works.
Kenworthy is Associate Professor of Nursing and Health Studies at the University of Washington, Bothell. We spoke to her a few years ago about how so many people relied on crowdfunding to pay their medical bills. Back then, Kenworthy told us that rather than being a great social leveler, there are actually stark inequities on sites like GoFundMe, having to do with wealth, class, race, education, even your zip code. And these factors tend to be pretty decent barometers for whether your campaign will succeed or fail. And the majority do fail. Only about 10% of campaigns meet their fundraising goals. So when the coronavirus struck, Kenworthy and her colleague Mark Igra decided to look at the data anew. They analyzed 175,000 GoFundMe campaigns created in the first 7 months of the pandemic. We invited Kenworthy back on this program again to talk about what they found for COVID-related campaigns. The stats, it turns out, were even more staggering.
So I think the most striking thing for us, which really took us aback, was that a very large proportion of campaigns, even larger than in the past, were really not raising any money at all. So 43% of campaigns that we looked like hadn't received a single donation.
From the podcast, Tiny Sparks. Learn the history of nonprofits before you give on Tiny Sparks. Available now on the Start Here podcast collection at wvxu.org/start here. Earlier this year, an experiment began. The Atlantic magazine teamed up with WNYC Studios in New York to start a podcast called The Experiment. While the first of its kind, The Experiment podcast wasn't called The Experiment for that reason. It's called The Experiment because it focuses on the experiment that is the United States. It's easy to forget that the U.S. is an experiment, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, with liberty and justice for all. That was the idea. The Experiment podcast aims to tell the story of what happens when individual people confront deeply held American ideals in their own lives and the cultural and political contradictions that reveal who we are. Let's give you a taste of The Experiment with a sample from the episode that reveals how a history book ignited a ferocious debate over Texas's founding legend about the Alamo and how this battle climbed the ranks all the way up to the Texas legislature. In this clip, host Julia LaGoria explores the impact of the new book by journalist Brian Burrow called Forget the Alamo.
Everybody in Texas goes to the Alamo, generally multiple times. This is the Jerusalem of Texas. You know, this is a secular, holy place to Texans.
It's holy because in 1836, the story goes that it was the site of an epic battle to make Texas independent from Mexico.
The story for going on 200 years has always been that, you know, Jim Bowie and Davy Crockett all went down to Texas to fight this dastardly Mexican dictator, Santa Anna. Of course, everybody was surrounded and killed.
Texans lost at the Alamo. But that battle was said to be a turning point. Those men who died there were martyrs, because after that, Texas was finally able to defeat Mexico.
Texan colonists were fighting for liberty. They were fighting against oppression. And they chose to give up their lives at the Alamo so that we could have what has become the modern American state of Texas.
That's why some Texans still repeat the famous battle cry, "Remember the Alamo," to honor the martyrs who died there. And Texans are fiercely protective of this history.
I'm 80 miles north, and if I rallied down to the Alamo Plaza every time there was a protest that threatened to turn angry, it's all I would do.
And so this past June, when Brian heard about a protest at the Alamo, he didn't think much of it at first.
Howdy, Texas. Coming to you live from the Alamo, along with some of my friends that have come down here today to again defend the Alamo.
You know, but this time, there was a bit of a clash between two different groups.
Protesters from the Latino civil rights group LULAC showed up and argued with these camo-clad militia types.
We're here because LULAC wants to honor the Mexico soldiers who died in the fight in the 1836 Battle of the Alamo.
A Latino civil rights group had suggested that Mexican soldiers who died at the Alamo might also be honored there, along with the Texans who died.
Now, if you're a Texan, you're probably going, that's a bunch of bullshit. You don't honor tyrants in Texas.
On one side, protesters from the This Is Texas Freedom Force carried large automatic rifles. And on the other side, Latino protesters were armed with a book.
It's called Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth.
Specifically, it was Brian's book.
When we saw protesters with the book on Alamo Plaza, that was the first time we realized that more was happening or more was going to happen than we expected.
The new book, Forget the Alamo, has set off a fierce battle over Texas's founding legend, which Brian did not expect.
It's intended to be a fun, accessible, open, friendly urging to just reconsider and be open to new ideas.
You did call it Forget the Alamo.
So.
Look, Forget the Alamo is the necessary provocation to get you to turn your head. If we had written a book called Reconsidering the Alamo, would we seriously be here today? No.
From the podcast, The Experiment. Learn the stories of how our history shapes our lives today from The Experiment from WNYC Studios and The Atlantic Magazine, and available now on the Start Here podcast menu at wvxu.org. Cincinnati is world-renowned for its innovation and creativity in business and consumer products and more. Our local podcast, appropriately named When Pigs Fly, celebrates and educates you about that history. Hosts Ali Martin and Patrick Bailey uncover Cincinnati's rich business history from the 1800s to today, sharing the ups and the downs of entrepreneurs and the fascinating stories about how Cincinnati is who we are today. In this sample of When Pigs Fly, Ali and Patrick talk with Cincinnati food historian Greg Hand about what food predated chicken wings as a favorite of Cincinnati's restaurant scene.
From the very very beginning of Cincinnati up until the 1930s, the equivalent of chicken wings was oysters.
What?
Cincinnati went through a ton of oysters.
What?
Transportation in Cincinnati or to Cincinnati was improved to deliver oysters faster. And so the oysters came largely from Baltimore. At the very beginning of Cincinnati, we're talking 1800s, yeah. They used to deliver oysters in cans. Oysters were either pickled oysters, or they were spiced. And when you look up the recipes for spices, it's abysmal. I don't think I would ever eat a cinnamon flavored oyster.
I like, compare this to spam, and I would still take spam over that.
Yeah, right. But by the 1830s, there were rapid mail routes from Baltimore to Wheeling, West Virginia. So you could get from Baltimore to Wheeling, West Virginia in 2 days, and oysters would be packed on ice. So that you would pack them in ice in Baltimore. You would get them halfway to Wheeling, change the ice. The next day you'd get to Wheeling, and at Wheeling they'd be put on a steamboat that would head down the Ohio River, and it would take 2 days to get to Cincinnati. So oysters were only 4 days old when they got to Cincinnati.
Wow. Pretty similar to today.
It was so lucrative to ship oysters that they crammed these mail stagecoaches filled with barrels with ice and oysters to the extent that the stagecoaches would break down and mail would be late being delivered.
And your mail would probably stink like fish.
And stink like fish, yes.
Oh my God. And how long did that last for?
That lasted until they got a reliable railroad route. And one of the reasons for a direct railroad route, you know, the train route, keep in mind, the first big train route that landed in Cincinnati was the Baltimore and Ohio. So the train route was set up to deliver oysters.
No way. To Cincinnati. We had an oyster issue.
Now, how much oysters did they actually eat? There are roads in Cincinnati where if you dig down far enough, you will see that the roads were paved with oyster shells.
In our local podcast spotlight, a sample of When Pigs Fly. Learn about the businesses and ventures that make the Queen City the queen of the Midwest from the past and still today on When Pigs Fly. Available now on the Start Here podcast collection at wvxu.org/starthere. As is usual and customary, let's take a quick look before we end the episode today at the Apple Podcast charts to see what podcasts are hot or up and coming around the nation. On its way to number one this week is a true crime podcast hosted by journalist Mandy Matney. Mandy's been covering the Murdaugh family of South Carolina since 2019's boat crash that killed Mallory Beach. And now after the double homicide of Maggie and Paul Murdaugh, Matney's new podcast provides exclusive insight into the intrigue surrounding the murder investigation, life in Hampton County, and several suspicious deaths that are all interconnected. That's the Murdaugh Murders podcast, number 2 on its way to number 1 on the Apple Podcast charts. To learn more about these podcasts today, check out the Start Here email. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and choose the Start Here newsletter from the bottom of the page. Thank you for joining us for Start Here, Cincinnati Public Radio's Discovery Podcast. For more about other podcasts we like, check out the Start Here collection at wvxu.org. It's our new specially curated collection of podcasts we think you might enjoy. Plus, check out the local podcast collection, podcasts created right here in Cincinnati by our local creators. And remember, if you've got a podcast or an episode you'd like to recommend, email us at podcast@wvxu.org. I'm Trip Eldridge for Cincinnati Public Radio, and thank you for choosing to start here.